Chapter 3. Miller looked at the plane's controls automatically. He was stunned almost into incoherence by Cook's behavior, and he needed time to think. But he could not allow the plane to slip out of control again. All his pilot's instincts took over, even as he tried to grasp the implications of the way Cook was acting. What did it mean? Was Cook totally demented as a result of a bump on the head when he fell into the excavation pit? Or was there something else going on inside Cook's head, Miller wondered, something that he could not even guess at? Like what? No, it had to be a bump on the head. He didn't know a thing about what head injuries could do to the human brain. He had a working knowledge of first aid, but it didn't include psychology. Cook's bizarre behavior had to have been caused by some kind of trauma to the brain. But how did that explain the face shifting, the multiple personalities, the strange things he was saying? What the hell was going on inside Cook's mind? And would he turn dangerous? As hard as Miller searched for answers, he could find no explanation. He had never before heard of anyone acting like this, and Cook did not act like he was insane, but as if he were taking turns being different people. Still, he was Cook. He had to be. Who else could he be? It's the head injury, Miller told himself. There's just no other explanation at all. And he glanced at Cook to confirm it. To his relief, Cook was entirely calm, glancing around the interior of the plane with deliberate interest. Miller sighed, trying to let go of his tension. At least he's okay now, he thought. If he'll just stay okay for a few more hours, I'll have some medical help. Cook met his eye, smiled, and nodded at the plane's controls.
Machine speed increase feasible? He said politely.
Miller blinked.
What do you mean?
Velocity of machine in the air relative to a hypothetical calibrating point on the ground below us.
Cook said.
Possibility of increase in ratio?
Miller shook his head. Too much was happening, much too fast. He felt as though reality had been yanked out from under him like a cheap, rotting carpet. He decided to pretend Cook's question made sense.
The airplane will travel slightly faster than this, he said. But this is the most fuel-efficient speed. It's also a little healthier for the engine not to rev it much higher for a prolonged period of time.
Yes, I see,
Cook said.
Very good. Internal combustion, certainly.
Cook, just relax, okay? We'll be in Tahiti in a few hours.
Nearby. Very nearby, an enormous crackling bolt of lightning shattered the sky. The plane lurched into the sudden downdraft in its wake.
Too late,
Cook said.
Real-time locus discovered.
Miller struggled with the controls, leveled off. He was distracted by the storm. It had come up out of nowhere. Moments ago, he'd had clear skies and unlimited visibility. Now an enormous thunderhead rolled ahead of him, spreading its thick black clouds directly across his path.
What did you say?
He asked Cook.
Time, space, coordinates discovered,
Cook said slowly and deliberately, like he was teasing someone stupid. As if to underline his words, another bolt of lightning crackled close by, and another even closer. The plane lurched and Miller fought to regain level flight.
Example,
Cook said with an uncharacteristic chuckle.
High percentage mission failure. Early return likely.
Miller shook his head. Enough was enough.
If you don't shut up and let me get through this storm, neither one of us will return anywhere, except underwater.
Cook giggled. And Miller almost snapped his own neck as he swiveled to look at his partner. He'd known Cook for 3 years, and in the last few months on the island had gotten almost as close to him as two heterosexual men could get. And in all that time, he had never heard Cook giggle. The sound was so alien to the man's personality that it made no sense. Like hearing the church choir sing the beer barrel polka at high mass.
I will,
Cook said with a bizarre giggle.
I'll be back.
And then, before Miller could do anything but stare, the storm was on them. Within seconds, the small plane was completely absorbed by dark, swirling clouds, and they were tossed madly between updrafts and stomach-wrenching drops. Miller fought for control, but in this case, control was an extremely relative idea. He could no more control the plane in this monster storm than Dorothy had controlled her house in the twister that took her to Oz. The clouds were so dark and thick now that Miller could barely see his hands on the controls. He toggled on the interior lights and snapped his hands back to the stick as they were thrown through a series of moves so violent that Miller feared the plane would break up. Straight down for 1,000 feet, then back up again, then from side to side, the storm threw them furiously across the sky. Miller fought to ride it out, but the storm had its way with them. The most he could manage was to minimize the effects, but in the sudden downdrafts, the propeller couldn't bite and he simply had to hang on and hope they'd make it through. For a while they did, but Miller knew it couldn't continue indefinitely. Somehow he had to find a way out of the storm, but it took all his skill merely to keep them in the air, and that would not be enough for long. Suddenly, they were thrown straight down on one wing. Miller fought the plane back to level just as the ocean came into view and climbed again.
Shit,
he said through tightly clenched teeth.
This is impossible.
Only in unassisted nature,
Cook said calmly. Miller risked a quick glance at the other man. Cook appeared calm, totally unruffled by their impending death. Miller opened his mouth to speak, and the plane was flung straight up. He fought back to level again and glanced back at Cook.
What's that supposed to mean?
Miller asked him. Cook regarded him blandly.
What did you say?
Miller insisted.
Which time?
Cook said.
For Christ's sakes, Cook,
Miller snapped.
You're playing bullshit games with me. You may not have noticed, but we're in actual danger in this impossible storm.
Who says impossible?
Cook replied innocently.
I do, goddammit. It came out of nowhere, and storms can't do that. And it came up faster than storms can move. Totally impossible.
He bit off his words as 3 blasts of very close lightning shook the plane, sending them into a sickening dive that Miller barely pulled out of.
What if nature is your friend?
Cook said, in a voice so sweet and reasonable that Miller would have slapped him had he been able to spare a hand long enough.
Then tell your goddamn friend to calm down,
Miller said instead through tightly clenched teeth.
Not my friend,
Cook said, with a bizarre giggle again.
Certainly not mine. Oh no, theirs.
Glad that's settled,
Miller said, guiding the plane's nose around a massive cloud column that shot up for nothing.
Theirs,
Cook repeated.
Entire universe, an us and them proposition. In this case,
them,
Miller said.
Not us. I get it.
Clearly,
Cook said.
Superior mentation, Tony. Recognition achieved, yes. Tree huggers, fertilizer freaks, pure bio trash.
Miller had begun to feel he was going to lose it. He didn't need the headache Cook was giving him, and he didn't need the distraction right now.
Cook,
he said.
Could you just shut up for a few minutes, please?
Oh, certainly,
Cook replied in an agreeable tone of voice.
But they won't.
3 bolts of lightning, each closer than the one before, blistered the air nearby.
See?
Cook said.
How about if you ask them real nice?
Cook giggled.
They won't listen to me.
The plane hit a sudden updraft, rocketing upward and trying to flip backward. Miller fought it back to level.
Whee!
Cook said. Miller had had it. Demented or not, his friend had worn him out. He could not fight the storm and listen to Cook's babble at the same time.
Talk to your friends, not to me,
Miller said.
Just leave me alone and tell them whatever you want, whatever will make them stop.
Okay,
Cook said, and was mercifully quiet for a few moments. Miller could at least concentrate on flying the plane. He kicked it left into a clear space between 2 gigantic thunderheads and saw a larger opening ahead. If he could just reach it before the engine stalled. Miller's hands flew across the controls as he tried desperately to restart the motor, but there was nothing. The starter didn't even kick over. Nothing at all. The plane began to dive. For 500 feet, as he watched the altimeter and struggled with the controls, the plane dropped like a rock. He gave up trying to restart the engine and, with both hands on the yoke, yanked it back, attempting to pull the plane out of the dive and into a controlled glide. They might land on the water and die of exposure, or thirst, instead of crashing and drowning, but there was no quitting Miller, and he would keep fighting until he couldn't anymore. He glanced at the altimeter. He was at least 600 feet, and the plane's speed was still increasing. He put everything he had into pulling back on the yoke. Not just physical strength, but all his willpower, too.
300 feet.
The plane began to respond. Slowly at first, then with increasing success. The nose came up, the airspeed began to slow perceptibly.
150 feet. 100.
With a last surge of power, Miller moved the yoke back, within just a few feet of skimming the waves. Using the speed he'd gained from the dive, he got the plane back up to 200 feet and leveled off again. He didn't want to go too high, because the storm's thunderheads. Miller felt his jaw drop. He twisted his head to look one way, then another, searching every corner of the sky. The storm was gone. Miller craned his neck, looking in all directions. But there was no mistake. He was gliding through a beautiful, clear afternoon in the South Pacific, with no turbulence and no sign of bad weather anywhere. The storm had vanished, without a trace, as if it had never been.
What the?
He started, and then gave that up too, because the engine started back up. End of chapter.